very much. I'm happy to be here again. I gave a presentation yesterday. How many people were not in that presentation yesterday? Boy, that's a problem. Well, I only have a few moments, and I think they have a tape of the presentation I made yesterday, and I'm sure that the committee will be happy to make this available to people at some point. I presume they will. I don't have time to go over all that information for the video or a lot of things. I really wanted to have a few moments to discuss something I didn't have a chance to get into yesterday. And that is the C-Study CE5 initiative. By the way, before I go into that, I want to correct things from the translation which were provided for me today. The paper, some of the information in the paper, at least its focus was really not in focus, and maybe something was lost in the translation. Part of what I said yesterday, which I want to clarify, is not that we should engage in any kind of extraterrestrial hostility, that we should try to create universal peace. However, there are people who I believe, from the best evidence we have seen and the top secret witnesses we have in our witness pool of military officials, that there are programs underway to attempt to militarize space and to attempt to engage these life forms in violent encounters. In fact, we know that this happened. We have top secret witnesses who have been present at more than one event when extraterrestrial vehicles have been tracked and targeted and destroyed, at least we know of in the United States, by U.S. Controlled assets. In addition to that, there have been encounters on the ground, such as at Fort Dix in New Jersey in 1978, when an extraterrestrial biological life form was shot and killed on the tarmac there. And we have a witness who, a very high official, who was the head of the 21st Air Force Intelligence Unit, who was present when this occurred, or right after it occurred, and who was fully briefed on the details of this. So these are not just idle speculations on our part. That is a problem. There is a very serious problem in how this subject is being managed and how it is being controlled. We feel that it is time for a full disclosure of the existence of extraterrestrial life forms to humanity, and that the sooner this occurs, the better, and that it needs to be put into a framework of not a scenario like Independence Day, but a scenario like I'm about to describe, and that is that we are not alone, and while these extraterrestrials may be very different from people in Norway or Kukisti or wherever, that they are essentially more like us than different. They are essentially more us than them. And that we need to begin to look at this phenomenon with the what I would call the eye of oneness, the ability to see the commonality we share with these life forms. At the present time, because of the extraordinary deep-cover, covert nature of the management of the subject, you have people who have certain type of glasses on. And if you look through rose-colored glasses, the world's going to look rosy. If you look through a militarist glasses, you're going to see an enemy everywhere. And unfortunately, that is what has happened. And in the vacuum that's been created by the secrecy, this has been able to get carried away to the point that I think now it constitutes the greatest threat to world security that we've ever faced. And this opinion, by the way, is not just mine, but it's also that of very senior military officials that I'm working with, as well as senior CIA officials that I've met with, that this is a very serious problem that is out of control, and that it is time for the people of the world to know about the subject, and to the extent possible, to regain control over the management of the policies surrounding the subject. Now, until that time happens, there are other things we can do. CSETI, the organization which I founded, is CSETI. By the way, I wish I had a big chalkboard, But if you want to find out more about us, you can hit us on the web if you're on the internet. We're www.csepi.org instead of com. C-O-M is if you're commercial, but we're a nonprofit research scientific group, so it's O-R-G. So anyway, Roark has that information, so if you need to get that, then you're welcome. I hope you can read this as good as a doctor's handwriting debt. Not good, but my 8-year-old writes better than I do. So you can find out more about a lot of our information than that. There are a whole lot of our research papers and physician patients that are on this website. By the way, I have a little interesting footnote about the website. We have a way of finding out who logs on to our website. And last week, I think the week before, we had the EOT log on. Anybody know what the EOT is? Executive Office of the President of the United States. We also had the most of the top secret units within the Army and Air Force and Navy intelligence log on, as well as most of the high-tech aerospace firms such as Lockheed and Rockwell International and TRW and all these other nice firms that make the toys that the boys like to play with. But it's very interesting to see the list of people. Hundreds and hundreds of top secret agencies and departments that have logged onto this website out of the 50,000 of people in the past. We got it up and going a few months ago. It's really quite an education to see that. We are working with senior members of the United States Congress, White House officials, Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the United Nations to resolve this problem of excessive secrecy and of apparent militarization of this embryonic relationship between humans and extraterrestrial people. But there's something more we can do. We need to do that. We need to be meeting with the Norwegian government, with the people in the Norwegian military. We need to be meeting with the UN officials, and we are, and we need to be meeting with the governments of many countries. But there's something that you can do in addition to helping us reach those people, and I hope you will. There are people in this audience. I want you to stay around after this meeting today to talk to me about who you know who knows someone that can get to your officials in your institute and in your military and in your intelligence directorate and in your government and in your parliament. Every single person here can do that. That's how C-City has built this global network. But in addition to that, you can do something else. You can take matters into your own hands. Now, this is a message which they really don't want me to tell you. And the first time I started talking about this, and it resulted in a near landing of 4 UFOs in Florida that was recorded on 5 videotapes, I was ended up in a hotel room with the head of Army Intelligence, a CIA official, a National Security Agency official, and about 10 other spooks. I don't even know who they belong to. And we had 64 questions until about 3 in the morning. Was the rubber hose treatment? It was gentlemanly. And it literally was in a hotel room. We're all crowded in there until wee hours of the morning. People from Los Alamos were there and other places. And they basically said in so many words, what the hell are you doing? Because what they had learned is that I had taken a group of people in a training situation, 45 people I had just met that day, and we started teaching them protocols for remotely sensing and vectoring a UFO into a landing situation. And this was down near Gulf Breeze, Florida. And that night, an event took place. We spent the whole day doing these protocols and training and discussing this. And we went out on the beach that night. And We got information that in about 20 minutes there would be three or four UFOs that would appear in the northwest skies about 20 degrees above the horizon. This was all remotely viewed information. How many people know remote viewing is? Ooh, we're really in trouble. This is when, with your eyes closed, you access that aspect of yourself, that holographic consciousness, which is universal, and you awaken and look someplace else. And believe me, the KGB has people who do it, or did, before it dissolved, and so do the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, as well as other intelligence units in the United States. I know because I've talked to the guys in these units. It works. Don't let the people tell you otherwise. You are more than what you appear to be. I will remind you of a statement from the mystic poet Rumi, who said, and it's a rhetorical question, "Thinkest thyself to be a puny form, when within thee the universe is folded?" In other words, you think you're only a small thing, when within you the entirety of the universe is folded. You are a universal resonator, and you are a hologram of the whole universe. And like any other hologram, it's like if you had a hologram of Marilyn Monroe right here, if you saw the image of Marilyn Monroe and then you took a piece of Marilyn Monroe's skirt and looked at it, you would have the entirety of the image of Marilyn Monroe within it. And if you took another teeny piece, it's really not a piece, the entirety. So the holographic paradigm is very much a good parallel paradigm to the reality of human consciousness. And so by accessing consciousness in its unbounded, non-local aspect, you can awaken or see objects that are distant from you, events that are distant in time, or things that are both distant in time and in space. Because consciousness operates outside of the linear time-space continuum. And we've been taught otherwise, but that's a fairy tale for kindergartners. It's time to grow up. The reality of ourselves is that awakeness, pure consciousness, you can call it spirit if you wish, is such that it exists outside of time and space. And if you learn to access spirit in its non-local form, you can see things at a distant point in space or time. That is a reality. It's a provable reality. And I would suggest that you take this very seriously, because it means that you have potential far beyond what your school teachers have told you, or even what your religious leaders have told you in most cases, and that your potential is tremendous. It is also precious and should never be misused. We'll get to that in a moment. Part of what we do then is I've taken people and trained them to do this remote viewing and remote sensing, but we also have electronic radio signals as well as lasers and other lights that we use to vector these spacecraft in. Well, in March of 1992, we were on the beach in Florida, and we had been doing these protocols, and believe it or not, we were sitting there with our eyes closed, but sometimes you can see more with the inner eye than the outer eye, and we were, basically, the information came to me that there would be three or four UFOs that would appear in the northwest sky, 20 degrees above the horizon, in about 20 minutes. And I shared this with the whole group. This is a provable fact. You go interview the people who were there. About 20 minutes later, three appeared, and then a fourth, in the northwest sky, 15 or 20 degrees above the horizon. And we started signaling to them, and they signaled back. And guess what? They started coming closer and closer. Now, this is when two or three people ran into their cars and drove away. So, be careful what you ask for, you may get it. And at that point, I started making a large triangular shape in the sky with these very powerful 1.5 million candle power lights. And instantly, the UFOs moved over and made a perfect equilateral triangle in response to our signaling in the sky. This we have on videotape. Fascinating video. This got some people's attention. And subsequently, I had these meetings with the head of Army Intelligence and a whole group of other people who said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm basically teaching people that not only are we not alone in the universe, but that they're here, and that there's no reason on God's green earth why each one of you shouldn't go out to someplace out in the countryside here and attempt to establish communication with this life form, as long as you are ready to do it. That's a big if. But what I say to people is, you have the right to do this. And I have told in a meeting I had with the Director of Central Intelligence, and he brought this subject up. He said, I've heard you're doing these things, you've had these encounters. I said, yeah. And I said, you know what? I said, with all due respect, sir, I said, the United States government, nor the UN, are doing anything proactive and positive about this relationship, which is very precious between humans and these other life forms. It is not inappropriate for the citizens of this planet to do a citizen's diplomacy effort, which is what CSETI is doing, to try to establish a bridge of peaceful communication and a liaison between humans and extraterrestrial people. I would suggest that you take this very seriously, that you do it. There's no reason why you can't do it. The only reason you can't do it is if you think you can't do it. The mind is a powerful thing. And there's a wonderful quote, as ye have faith, so shall your powers and blessings be. If you don't think you can do it, you're not going to be able to do it. I don't care what you're doing. If I'm a trauma doctor, if I'm trying to put a chest tube in, if I start thinking negatively, I can't do this, I won't be able to do it. Or if you're trying to intubate someone in an emergency situation when they're dying, and you got a 2-year-old that's dying, and you're trying to get them on a ventilator, if you start, you can't think that way. Think that you can do it, and you can, and there's no limit to what you can accomplish. I'm certain of that. We put limits on ourselves. The universe is very few. Because, in reality, the universe is folded with the entirety of the universe is accessible through your mind and consciousness and within you. CSETI has developed a set of protocols which are primitive by some standards, insofar as they don't rely on a lot of gadgetry. We don't have any funding. If there's anyone here who would like to help us find funding to do a proper international, interplanetary diplomatic effort, please talk to me. But right now we have no funding. And so what we have done is use simple devices, simple techniques to create a vectoring situation that has resulted in time after time after time near landing and close encounters with these spacecraft and with the extraterrestrial life forms. It has been an extraordinary journey for me to have been part of this and to have founded this effort, because now we have several dozen working groups, as we call them. Some people call them welcoming groups, welcoming parties. They have formed all over the world, from Japan to Europe to South America and all of the United States, of people numbering no more than about 4, 5, or 6 people in a team, who have gone out to areas using these protocols and attempted to establish communication with these life forms. I want to comment for a moment on what I think is the big rate-limiting step to having that happen. And it's not having $1 billion in a black budget. I met with a National Security Agency person. I said, you know, with all your billions of dollars, I think it would be less successful in establishing communication with these life forms than a pure-hearted, sincere person with a flashlight and a thought that's clear. And he said you're right. He did. He acknowledged that that was true. So I think that the intent of the purpose that you go out into the field with is the most important thing. If you want to do this, you need to be clear in your mind, and I think in your heart, of why you would want to do it. It's not to see a UFO. Or rain, you have millions of pictures. Don't go and do this because you want a thrill. The extraterrestrial life forms that are here I don't believe one fool with people who are out thrill seeking and curiosity seeking. It's okay to be curious, we all are, but there has to be something larger animating your purpose. And that purpose needs to be grounded in a sincere desire to create a peaceful dialogue with these extraterrestrial people. And it can't be done. It needs to be done free of the usual human motivation of greed and exploitation. Don't get involved in a project like this, I ask you, please, if you have ulterior motives related to stealing an extraterrestrial widget, so you can make $1 billion, all right? Or figure out how they're operating so you can become the next Rockefeller controlling the energy systems of the planet or what have you. I think that you need to do it for the correct purpose of a sincere wish to establish communication and a liaison and a diplomatic entree to these life forms in a spirit of openness, without prejudice, and without fear. If you're afraid, they're not going to come around. The only people who come around when you're afraid are human-piloted, reverse-engineered alien reproduction vehicles. And they'll scare you. But the ones, if you're afraid, the extraterrestrial life forms sense that remotely. They've got technology. And they're going to stay away. They're not going to bother you. So do it with a clear mind and a clear conscience, and do it for all the right reasons. The protocol that we're using consists of the following. Number one, common sense intelligence. If you learn that in the north of Norway, there's an area of incredible UFO activity that's going on, I would suggest that you organize an expedition, a party. Maybe Monica can go there with you, who was here yesterday, and go there, and to the area where there's a lot of UFOs that are active. And then once you are there, be there with the proper equipment. You need to have a few basic things. A handheld laser is enough, because they'll see it from very far away. A few high-powered lights that are portable and don't need to be plugged into a house, need to be totally mobile, that will shine out at least 75,000 feet. To get that, you need about 1 million candle powers. So it's about 75,000 feet reach and clear air. You need to have what we have devised are these electronic tones, which have been recorded from UFOs that we have on a continuous loop tape, that you can play and then project out into space over an antenna. You can use any simple radio, walkie-talkie, they'll pick it up. And then the most important thing, and I point this out to people, the only thing more valuable than a laser and all these other things is the human mind, what I call the universal resonator, called consciousness of a human, because that is what really is effective. Yesterday I spoke a little bit about extraterrestrial technology. I want to review and refresh your memories about that. How many people think that you're going to communicate successfully through interstellar space using radio waves? Raise your hand. You're in error. Because if your home planet is 1,000 light years away, which is not that far, the universe is just so vast. 1,000 light years is relatively close. And that's the distance a beam of light travels at the speed of light in 1 year is a light year. So 1,000 light years, it would take 1,000 years at 186,000 miles per second. I don't know what it is in kilometers, because we're backward in the United States and don't use that. But it's a long way. Trillions of miles. Now, at the speed of light, if you're communicating with a radio signal or a microwave signal, like the NASA project, the SETI project, they're listening for microwaves from outer space, it takes 1,000 years in Earth years for a radio signal to go across 1,000 light years of space. That's how long it takes. So for the signal to come to you and for you to say, hello, how are you doing today? For the answer to come back, fine, thank you very much. That just was 2,000 years. You're dead. I didn't know. You're already, you know, you're stardust by then. So the fact of the matter is, the speed of light is just too damn slow. It's way too slow. And so what you begin to have to look at are technologies which drop out of the linear space-time continuum and cross through this crossing point of light and enable modulation of signals at multiples of the speed of light, many multiples of the speed of light, and preferably instantly through space. Just like we almost instantly get a signal across the globe, because the globe is that far, you know, 2,000 miles, you need to think in terms of being able to get a signal that is almost instant through vast distances of space. To do that, I'll remind you of something which the Moody Blues sang about. Do you know about the Moody Blues group now? Big group of in the UK and America, I suspect here too, in some quarters. And there's a little song where they make the interesting statement that thinking is the best way to travel. Now, I would amend that a little bit and say it's also the best way to communicate if you have a reproducible system. And here I'm not talking about pure telepathy and things of that sort. I'm talking about some of what Rowney mentioned, and that is, say this is a computer, very pretty computer. But let's say this is a computer and you want it to do something. Instead of touching it or speaking to it, you think to it and it does it. Now that technology exists. This is not science fiction. This is stuff that we know exists and has actually already been studied in super secret projects, at least in the United States, and I'm sure also in the UK and in Russia. And these technologies, which are technical systems that interface with thought, are tantamount to a non-linear and, in fact, non-local holographic telemetry system. Just like we had telemetry between mission control and the moon, and there was a delay of however many seconds because of the distance. This is a telemetry system which bypasses the linearity of the time-space continuum and permits very instantaneous communication across vast distances. Any civilization from outside our solar system that is capable of getting here uses this system. And they have to, because otherwise they would be dead before they could communicate back and forth to their home planet. It's essential to understand that the speed of light, radio waves, microwaves, television signals, these are too slow. They all travel at the speed of light. So here I'm talking about something that I know sounds pretty far out there, but I'm talking about the sort of holographic, quantitative as well as qualitative aspect of consciousness, mind, in a technical application, a technological application. But that's what these are using. Let me tell you this interesting story. When I first started this project, I went through the literature, and we found dozens of cases where people had seen a UFO and hadn't signaled or waved their arms or done anything, but were sitting there, and they had the thought, oh, I wish it would come back and turn around. Instantly, it stops, turns around, and comes over. It blows their mind. And then they go, I'd like it to move to the right, and it moves to the right. And then they think, I want it to move to the left, and it moves to the left. Now, if you can take one or two of these cases and say, well, it's a coincidence. You can make a cloud go away, and some of them are going to just sublimate and disappear. But in this case, we had dozens and dozens of cases. So what we did was to put this in an experimental protocol. And the protocol is the following. I don't possess a computer that does this. I know people who have used them, but there are people who, if they share it with me, I'm sure would be tweaked, killed, terminated. So I haven't asked them to share that technology with me yet. But I figured something differently, and that is, I'm awake, you're awake, so those of you who aren't asleep yet, you're conscious, and you have thought. Well, if the extraterrestrials have these devices, and it can be modulated through nonlinear, complicated thought, then all we need to do is learn to center ourselves, enter into this expanded aspect of a holographic quality of consciousness, and within that state, remotely view the spacecraft, and then link your thoughts to their telemetry system and guide them in. And that's what we do. So, to give you an example, let's say that we're in outside Oslo. Say we're north of here, 100 kilometers. You would, as a team, sit quietly. You would remotely view space and the area around this part of the Earth, deep space, and eventually the entirety of space, including the Milky Way galaxy and the other galaxies. And if you saw and picked up on, not an imagination, but a remote sense, an actual objective hit, okay, of a spacecraft or a life form, you would enter it with permission and ask it to follow you as you guided it into your location. And you would do so as follows. After entering into this non-local holographic aspect of consciousness, you would then show them who you were, and you would show them our Milky Way galaxy, and one of the spiral arms is something we call the sun, and you would pull them in, and then you would show them our solar system, and the third planet from the sun is the Earth, and you would pull them in and guide them in visually with mind, thoughts, staying connected to their telemetry system. Then you would show them the continent of Europe, and then you would go to the northern part of Europe, and you would show them Scandinavia. You would then show them Norway, Oslo from space, and you'd be seeing all the light from very far out, the right instrumentation, which they have. And then you would show them that you were 100 miles north of Oslo in a field with a group of five people. And you would sit there in this state, remotely viewing them, and then remotely vectoring. Vector is like the vector of SAS flight into the Oslo Airport vector system. And you would do this for 5-6 hours. Take some discipline to do this, I guess. Most people can't sit still for more than 2 seconds. But, we're not trained to do this. But it's a matter of training. And you would, at the same time, have the other technologies on site, lasers, light, and we also have with us the landing strobe. You can get them in the state's military surplus. It's our battery operated, and you push a button, and they put out a very bright strobe so that if we see an object, we signal to it with a big light and then put out a triangular formation of the strobe to show them where we would recommend that they come in. And on some occasions, not every time, it's not like there's a couple of times to bring out there, but on a number of occasions, we have successfully had these objects come within hundreds of feet of our team, signaling with us and communicating. That is in a nutshell. If you comprehended what I said, you got a whole week's worth of training, and those of you who are very bright, which is most of you in Norway, and you are, I don't undersell you're very, very fabulous group of people. I think that you really can do this. We're going to do a five-night training. It's going to be 6 days and 5 nights in the high desert of California for a select number of people. I think we only allow 20 or 30 people to do this with me. But we're doing it next month in November. Those people want to come, you know, please feel free to. Roar has all the information. I ran out of flyers about it, but feel free to come. But what I would say to you is that regardless of whether you have any formal training, regard these life forms as friendly. Regard them as more like yourself than foreign. Because they are. And let me tell you why they are. You are conscious and awake. And even though people make fun of humanity a lot in terms of the nonsense that we've engaged in recent history, we have done a lot of foolish things as a species. Our potential is as great as any life form in the universe. We do have, in my opinion, that ray of the infinite within us. We have extraordinary potential, and we should not undersell ourselves. Do not short sell yourself. And that this aspect of ourselves, the mind of a human, the consciousness, the deeper aspect of who we are. If you want to look at it that way, the immortal, eternal, unchanging, conscious spirit that we are, That is as high as it gets in the universe. That is as great as it gets. And each of you are that. Indeed, the very famous physicist who established the particle wave theory of quantum physics, Schrodinger, said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it's very close to what he said, that the total number of minds in the universe is one. That is, it is a singularity. That there is one consciousness, awakeness, conscious intelligence, shining through each personality, and that we mistakenly think that we are all separate entities, when in reality, we are always one. And I think this is literally true, scientifically true, and experientially true. And if you look at that, then you can look into the, if you understand that point, you can look into the eyes of an extraterrestrial and not see him or her as an alien, but as same. You will see that that life form is awake. You will see that that life form is conscious. And the consciousness, not what it's conscious of, not its personality, not its fund of knowledge, not its political system, but the essence of its awakeness, its consciousness, is the exact same stuff of mind whereby you are awake. It is all one. And if you understand this, you will see that there is a very profound foundation. There is a very deep basis for universal relations and for universal peace. And it consists of what we carry with us all the time, waking, sleeping, dreaming, and that is consciousness, the silent, pure mind of our reality. And that, my friends, is the same as the extraterrestrial consciousness. Consciousness is universal. Literally, quantum mechanics in the last few years established that photons seem to be conscious. They have done a quantum mechanics experiment that was reported in all the scientific journals. Even Newsweek magazine had an article about this, where they would shoot a photon into an area that had an aperture or an opening in it, and if they smoothed the opening, a photon would precognitively adjust so it would go through it. That it seemed to have precognition and intelligence. Literally, the dust beneath your feet has an aspect of this conscious intelligence. But don't break into pantheism here. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying this is God. I'm saying that this is always indivisible. It is always a singularity. It is always a continuous oneness of awakeness and pure conscious intelligence. That is real. This bathes our bodies, the floor, the entire universe is awake, and so is every other sentient being. But a human can be aware of awareness, and by being aware of just awareness, can become intimately involved with this ability to see beyond our limitations and to communicate with these other life forms. This is what I shared with you just now, the basis of all the advanced extraterrestrial technology. And that is the understanding of what Ed Mitchell and I, the astronaut Ed Mitchell and I talked about as quantum holography, this holographic aspect of mind that's in a quantum state and that is present in every atom, in every subatomic particle, in every aspect of the universe. There is this element of intelligence. Ed Mitchell wrote a book called The Knowing Universe, that the entire universe has the capacity to be awake and self-knowing and intelligent. Utilize it. You have it within you to do that. And for God's sake, don't be afraid of anything, because nothing can happen to you. You have to be willing to understand that there is nothing that can ever really harm you. You can then go beyond all fear. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that a little of this eliminates all fear. And the this he was referring to is this unbounded aspect of ourselves, this intelligent, conscious aspect of ourselves. Let us look to that as we go into the next millennium and not into the fear that he would like us there. I want to share with you one other little story. Do I have any time to do this? 10 minutes. Ooh, I'm running out of time. That was just not what I wanted. These are my business, my cards, if you want one. I feel like Bozo the Clown going to jump out of the car. This. We were at a dinner party last night at Lily's South. God bless her. Thank you very much. Wonderful. Norwegian food. Love it. My favorite. This is a compass that has seen a lot of action around the world. And all I'm going to say to you about this is something very extraordinary happened in June. We had a training party of 30 people in the area of Colorado known as the Bloodless Valley, the area where there has never been war or fighting. Native Americans regard it as their most sacred area in North America. And there is a mountain there called Blanca Peak. It is 14,239 feet, I believe, or thereabouts. You can tell a doctor is obsessive compulsive when he worries about the last, you know, okay, famous joke. We don't worry about details. But this mountain has been the epicenter of UFO activity, allegedly, for hundreds and maybe thousands of years. But certainly in the modern era, there are extraordinary accounts of UFOs going in and out of this mountain. All right, I described yesterday the technology that permits a solid material spacecraft that travels through interstellar space to go into a solid mountain without crashing. And the way that happens is that they spaceship the every atom in the craft so that it's a little bit out of phase with our solid reality and passes into and through solid matter. Okay, that's all you need to know about that. But anyway, it's done easily with a little bit of help from some advanced technology. But what happened is that we had a team of people that were in this area doing some training, and we were there for two reasons. One, because
Here we had to change the tape, so a little of the information in this part of the lecture is missing.
And underground and high end mountain. We went there for many purposes, but the primary one is I was training with about 30 people on one of these research expeditions. And after an extraordinary amount of electrical storm activity one night, we were up on the side of this mountain, probably about 10,000 feet altitude, and several UFOs came directly overhead, coming out of and going into the mountain. It was so quick that if you had blinked your eyes, you would have seen it. You can see them go right through that crossing point of light. I mean, just extraordinary stuff. Later in the evening, we got out after the storm subsided and all the electrical storm activity stopped, and we noticed that there were all these little probes floating around and blinking on and off. They were blue, white, and aquamarine, and red, and they weren't just the retinal firing that you see when you're out at night, because everyone would see them. You know, you don't have 20 people have their retinas fired at the same time. And we said, well, there's something happening. We've had this happen many times when the ETs are about to set up some kind of event. Well, we got the sense that they wanted us to go up further on the mountain. We left our cars, and about half the team went with me up to an area where there was a little hidden clearing amongst the evergreen trees, way high on the mountain. And we went in there, and it's sort of like a hologram, but more sophisticated than that. Sort of like a molecular computer projection of these extraterrestrials has been projected out onto the side of the mountain. I mean, we're standing there like this close, and there was a semicircle of them. About maybe 20 of them. And I walked forward until I went into an area where right above my head there was a golden light that was sort of scintillating, and I stopped. I stopped right there. And we just basically communed with each other, communicated with each other for about half an hour. And the rest of my team was in a semicircle behind me. And so it made a circle in this beautiful clearing. I won't talk much more about that because it's really beyond words to talk about what happened. It's a very personal thing for me, as directors say. And it's something that I can't prove to you. But what I can prove to you is that the next day, this compass, which has worked perfectly for 5 years, even survived the near landing of an extraterrestrial spacecraft in July of 1992 at Alton Barnes, which caused the compass to go 360 degrees around the dial counterclockwise in the same direction that the spacecraft was spinning. And what's interesting is that the next day I pulled this out because we were in another area trying to do some reconnaissance, and I took it out and it said north, but north was south. South was north. And this compass has been permanently changed so that magnetic north is not magnetic north anymore. It's interesting because I had this compass on me. It was in the breast pocket of my jacket and right over my heart, which is interesting. Oh, the heart is electrical. You know what EKG is. So this was an interesting experience. And these are the sort of things that have happened many times in our research team. And what I say to people is that there is no limit to how far we can take this. Don't let the CIA or covert programs or your military or anyone tell you that you don't have the right to reach out to these life forms in a friendly gesture of communication. Do it. You don't need permission from anyone. If you want permission from someone but you need an authority figure, I gave you permission today. Go do it. Because the time has come for us as people to take this relationship into our own hands and to work to establish global peace and universal peace, and to not allow those who would like to see this happen in the form of warfare prevail. There does not need to be any more war on this planet. It is something that we can forever leave behind us, and it is time that we do. I firmly believe that we are about to enter into a time which will be marked by thousands of years of peace, where there will be no more international or interplanetary conflict. And I suggest that you focus your vision on that far horizon and that you draw that future to us, and that it can be done if we come together as people who look to the future with hope and with an open mind. Thank you. God bless you.